Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we have once again with us May Deeby. And May, we are certainly glad that you could join us once again on the podcast. Thanks so much for making time out of your day to join us.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me back.
Absolutely. May, on the last podcast, you told us a bunch of stuff about all kinds of crazy stuff. And we were sitting there, we were thinking there was really so much more that we wanted to ask about. So we kind of wanted to drill this down a little bit and talk more along the lines of healing.
Mm. Yeah. And first of all, I want to thank you for doing the podcast from your kitchen. I think the last time we spoke, I was sitting in my son's bedroom balancing on a child-sized chair with my iPhone sat on some shoeboxes.
Yeah, nice.
Using the audio and video capture from the iPhone. So
we have improved a little bit since then. Yeah. Not too much. Just because we bought a $40 camera doesn't mean we're doing any better here, but at least we can sit in a room and not have feedback and everything. Because one time we actually tried to do a Zoom call and we didn't realize that if we were sitting in the same room with our phones in front of us, it was going to feed back. So we had to stop that. I had to go in the back room and sit there and do that. But at least we're getting a little more professional.
Yeah.
Just like this much.
Slightly.
Slightly.
Well, we all got to start somewhere. Starting my podcast, I recorded on the floor of my closet. So
yeah.
We all start somewhere.
I'll tell you, as somebody who's worked in military intelligence for a number of years, the fact we couldn't work out how to use Zoom effectively probably explains quite a lot about what's going on in the world at the moment.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Now, I came up with the topic of healing because there are a lot of different alt health approaches to healing and recovery. And you went over hypnotherapy, hypnotism a lot last time, and how it can particularly help people find themselves, their true selves, which have probably been buried with emotional trauma or just a lack of time to really focus and, you know, understand what motivates you in life and stuff. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the benefits of some other alt health approaches, such as meditation, perhaps some plant health. Just various things where people who, you know, especially now have more and more time, or they used to having more and more time now, where I think people always used to try and fill their spare time. And during COVID, I think people got a lot more spare time than they bargained for. And so tried to find ways to fill it. And so now, you know, people have got used to perhaps searching for a few more self-beneficial things on the internet. I mean, certainly the self-help and self-health hashtags apparently have been exploding with people trying to live a healthier lifestyle, because I guess if anything, you know, COVID kind of brought a certain level of mortality into the picture, and so people wanted to learn, you know, how do I improve my own health? So if something like this comes around again, how can I be in the best mental, physical state and most positive mindset to approach something like this, both from a personal point of view but also in my circle of influence? You know, how can I be a better, you know, I guess, rock to kind of lean on for other people who may be struggling with stuff? So sorry, that was a lot of words, but that's
but they were good words.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I mean, healing, I think we have this vision of healing and that it's like a bright white light comes down and it feels good and warm and it's like a warm blanket and it's beautiful and it's comfortable. And I think the truth is that healing can be hard. It can be a long road. It can be bumpy. It can be uncomfortable, and it can show us parts of ourselves or parts of other people that perhaps we weren't aware of. So it can be quite uncomfortable. And I share all of that to say that it also is totally not linear. We also are used to this, like Amazon Prime, I order something and it's at my doorstep within a day, or pop a pill and, you know, I'm healed. We're used to this instant gratification. any millennial or Gen Z will tell you that with the swiping, like it's instant gratification, and healing doesn't sit in that bucket. It is a loving commitment to yourself, and that can sometimes be a lengthy process. So I just think it's important to call that out. Like first and foremost, like let's just call out the pink elephant in the room that healing is a process. It's not linear. It takes time, and it's not always rainbows and butterflies. However, I will say it's always worth it.
Yeah. Well,
to kind of go to that instant gratification, I got to share a story with you, May. And
great.
I think, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I think you might be old enough to remember this, but maybe not. Okay. So the other day, my internet went down at the house. Okay. Uh-huh. So
Did you try turning it on and off again?
I went on my phone and I realized my internet service provider had a message that said internet's down in, you know, the neighborhood. Okay. And so we have an old DVD player. So we hadn't even hooked it up. It hadn't been hooked up in like 6-7 years. And we're sitting here trying to figure out what to watch. And so we hook up the DVD player, which is fascinating the kids. They remember, when they were babies that, yeah, we had DVDs. But now I hook this DVD player up. And we're digging through a box of DVDs. And we look at the one we chose to watch. I'm not going to say what it was. But there was a sticker on that DVD that it was a pre-owned Blockbuster DVD that wife and I bought years ago. And my kids look at me and they say, "What's Blockbuster?"
That hurts.
Just absolutely shocking, right?
Because we're
in that, like you say, that instant Netflix, I'm going to click the button. I want to watch this show right now. I don't have to wait. I don't have to go to the Blockbuster store and, you know, hope that the new movie is out and they have that disc right there and that I can grab it off the shelf. Or I also remember every time I went into a Blockbuster, we actually didn't go to the shelves first. We went to the return cart and we dug through the return cart because we figured that's what everybody's watching. So
that's good stuff.
Yeah, let's dig through that and figure out what we could get. And it kind of goes back to what you're talking about. It's everything right now is so instant. And when you can't have that instant gratification, people get so frustrated.
I will mention he has a hard drive with 3,500 movies on it, which he didn't bother plugging in just to make a point about DVDs and Blockbuster.
But. Well, that's because you gave me the new updated hard drive and I've been too lazy to take it out of my backpack and actually plug it into my Xbox.
Yeah, I think
world problems.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying.
I think one of the things you touched on, May, is pretty important, that people don't see a detoxification mentally or emotionally as perhaps bringing up an unpleasant experience, whereas physically, if you detox, normally it is pretty unpleasant in those first few days or weeks. And, you know, emotionally, spiritually, it shouldn't be any different, that you're going to get things out which you will never get rid of unless you fully come to terms with them, because the more you pretend it's not an issue or it will just go away if I ignore it, you know, the more influence it has and the harder it is to pull it out. It's like a tooth with deeper roots. So yeah, people do approach, you know, thinking it's going to be this lovely smothering white light and I'm going to have comfort and joy and be like, I've been eating magic mushrooms for 3 days and it'll be the most wonderful healing experience ever, where it might be absolutely on some levels quite terrifying coming to grips really with some of the stuff which might have been an issue for 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, you bring up some really good points. And, you know, I think there's a lot that can be said about the process of physical healing versus mental healing. And like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Like, do you address one before the other? And I would love to get into that conversation, but I want to sidebar for a quick second. Would you be open to hearing a story about an ayahuasca experience that
I had? Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So you were in Des Moines?
Was I in Des Moines?
Yeah. Oh, wait, not Iowa. Okay. I heard Iowa.
No, ayahuasca as in the that's psychotropic the shaman used to put on a next level kind
of. Okay, like, I thought this was something in Iowa.
No, not in Iowa. Oh, no. Okay. Not some all whiskey right. in Iowa. No. Okay. Iowa whiskey. Do you have a few moments to talk about that after the ayahuasca?
Ooh. Yeah, we all can right. talk about that for a couple
Iowa
minutes.
Makes whiskey?
Well, they must do. They got nothing else to do.
Well, yeah. Apparently, but they have this psychotropic drug in Iowa.
Mm.
That's where it's from, right?
We're putting Iowa on the map absolutely. Here tonight.
Yeah, all right, yeah. Tell us all about this, man.
Yeah, Iowa.
Okay, so for those who maybe are not familiar with ayahuasca, it is a plant medicine that comes from the jungle, and it's the combination of a plant vine and the leaves of another plant that somehow, and they don't quite know how, somehow the people of the jungle knew to combine this vine and this plant in a brew, basically making a tea that combines them, and through that combination, the brewing creates a tea that has DMT in it, so that when we then ingest it, it releases DMT in our brains and we can have an experience. So
dimethyltryptamine, by the way.
Yeah, I was about to ask her what DMT dimethyltryptamine.
Your brain actually produces it naturally, which is why the body doesn't reject it when you get it through other.
So it's not the wrapper.
No.
Okay.
No. Not yet, anyways. Not yet.
That would be a cool name for a rapper, though. I'm DMT.
Would. Yeah, it would actually. Yeah.
Okay, we can talk about that too after we talk about Iowa. So yeah, this is a little bit about ayahuasca, just for some background in case you're like Iowa who. And I went to Costa Rica, and I went to a facility that has 4 nights of ayahuasca ceremonies, and. You know, I'm expecting to have visuals and to have physical body sensations and to have like these wide variety of experiences, or like have a direct communication and a download from source or whatever it is, because this is what's been communicated to me as options. And if you go on YouTube and Google ayahuasca, you'll see videos and people of like having hallucinations or whatever. And for me, for the most part, my experience was what's labeled as a nada, meaning nothing, that I mainly rested, that yes, I purged, because there is a purging that happens when you drink the ayahuasca. Mm. But for the most part, I rested, and I kind of was like, what the heck? Like, is something wrong with me? Am I not doing this right? Like, why am I not having this experience? Whereas other people in the room with me are. Anyways, I'm sharing all of this to get to a point, and I am arriving there, I promise. They also offered yoga in the mornings. And so I'm on my way to yoga, and I'm looking at everyone else kind of scurrying their way to yoga. And I look at this one woman, and she has a dark green top and a light green bottom. And I'm like, her yoga outfit doesn't even match. What's wrong with her? And I look at someone over there, and they've got like frizzy morning hair, and they're just like slumping over to do yoga. And I'm like, oh my God, did you look at a mirror before you left the house? Like, look at your hair, you frizzball. What are you doing? And as I'm walking my way to yoga, I'm judging everyone so much. And for the first time, I finally heard that talk track, and I noticed myself doing it. And it hit me all of a sudden that that's actually how I talk to myself, or at that time, that's how I was talking to myself on the regular. And that internal voice was not a very nice one. In fact, it was very judgmental. And through that realization, I realized that I didn't like myself. And that, it still makes me emotional, because it's, even to say that is, it brings up a lot to be like, I don't like myself. Well, if you don't like yourself, then who does? So it was this process of, I didn't necessarily have these insane experiences during the ayahuasca ceremonies. My learnings came after the fact, and they were small, gentle whisperings that I needed to be hyper aware to, or else I could very easily miss them. And that's how the ayahuasca was speaking to me, was in these whispers. And for since that point, since I had that realization, it's been a journey for me to release a process of judging. I mean, we are human, so it is a natural instinct to judge, and a part of that is to make sure that we're safe and all of these things. but we don't necessarily need to judge the point of calling someone, you know, like a frizzy head and like say that they look stupid or whatnot. So I share all of that long story to say that that was a realization that came to me very gently that has been a talk track ever since. And now that I've been aware of it, I continue to be aware of it. And the healing is still happening.
Yeah. Now, I remember listening to a Joe Rogan podcast where he was talking about an experience with DMT. And he said he found the whole thing very, not humiliating, but very humbling, because basically the images, you know, he had were really kind of telling him, look, you think you're this big thing, but you're not, you're not crap, you know, in the grand scheme of things. You know, you might think you're important, but what you're achieving is, you know, not even a little scratch on history. And, you know, you need to not take yourself so seriously, because you're stopping a lot of, you know, doors opening in your life, because, you know, you want it this way, the Joe Rogan way. You're not, you've instead of being more open to things, you've become more closed off, because you've seen the success of how certain things work, and you're trying to stick too regimentally to those without opening up other areas of your life and, you know, getting enjoyment from that. And he said he found that he was expecting something completely different. He was expecting one of these trippy type of, I don't know if you've seen the movie A Million Ways to Die in the West, when the dude has the ayahuasca in that and goes on the trip and sees the dancing sheep and all this. I think he was expecting that, but what he saw was kind of like almost like a mosaic of court jesters just laughing at him, and he got this clear communication that, look, you take yourself too seriously, and this is stopping a lot of things happening in your life and blocking off creativity and life experiences, because you're setting this strict regimen for yourself. And what was originally, you know, your greatest power was that you'd go any direction, you know, from, you know, doing Fear Factor and, you know, having a podcast and basically talking to anybody, to now it's become too business-like, too structured-like. So again, that was very different for him. Now, when you add ayahuasca, were you throwing up? Because I've heard a lot of people have some stomach issues and will puke for a couple of days without having a bad reaction.
And it is designed to be purgatory, if I'm not misusing that word. It is designed to have you purge. And, you know, as a process of getting ready for the ceremonies, you are fasting. You don't eat for like 4 or 5 hours leading up to the ceremony. So oftentimes, you know, what you're purging is more than just the food that's in your system. For a lot of people, there was one woman who, she had been addicted to her prescription pills. And as she was throwing up in her bucket, she saw all the pills, all of them, like as if she was purging them all up. And for her, that felt like she was purging up the addiction that she at that point didn't even realize that she was addicted to her pills. It was this whole realization. And then she had to purge it up and get it up and out of her system. And then she said from that point forward that she didn't touch it. That was it for her. You are physically purging, but they say it's energetically much more than that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's that kind of 5-6 hour period is normal of anybody if they're kind of like addicted to smoking or alcohol or types of drugs, when your body,
I take offense to that,
eliciting, you know, a response that, okay, we need more of this. And it's like almost like worms coming out of the soil when there's rainfall and they don't want to drown, that your body starts making it pretty obvious on a physiological, you know, thing, that you start getting shakes or sweats and your mind and need to have that addiction fulfilled starts taking priority over some of your other base, you know, chemotropic type instincts. And people, you know, that's when they get in that dangerous phase of, oh, I must have this, I must have that. And so that makes complete sense about what you said about purging your body of that, because that's when the body is telling you, I need this thing I'm addicted to. And suddenly when it's at its most vulnerable, you're kind of clearing it out of your system. And I've heard it been explained almost as kind of like an exorcism, you know, just trying to taunt something to come to the surface and then pulling it out of you, because without that cleansing, you can't fully experience, you know, ayahuasca how it's meant to be, because you're in this conflict between something which wants something better for you and obviously this addiction which wants to keep you trapped.
Right. Yeah. I think like, you know, obviously when you bring in the terminology of exorcism, that probably freaks out a lot of people. And they're like, oh my God, I'm never going to touch that. That sounds terrifying. And so I agree. And yet at the same time, I'm like, I kind of want to shy away from calling it an exorcism just because then it seems like it's like there's something that's evil within you that you're, you know, evoking. And of course it's not that way. And, you know, the medicine, they call her grandmother ayahuasca or mother ayahuasca. It is a feminine energy in terms of there being like feminine, gentle, masculine, rough, you know, the classic definition of masculine and feminine. And so she ultimately is there to guide you through an experience and to like gently bring you through it. But, you know, sometimes that motherly love is a harsh one, but you got to get through it. And you do.
Ryan, so just for my clarification, because you brought up the movie, I thought about another movie that wasn't ayahuasca. It was actually peyote. Oh, so so let's kind of compare ayahuasca and peyote, because I was thinking about the movie Fanboys, which deals with, you know, kids trying to see episode one of Star Wars, and they're gonna invade Skywalker Ranch and do all this stuff, and they have this Indian guy who gives them peyote, and they're seeing Ewoks, and they're, you know, going nuts or whatever. So what's the big difference between ayahuasca and peyote, or is it the same thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I am by no means an expert on peyote, but what I believe is that it's a cactus. And that I think it may stem from Mexico and maybe like New Mexico, that kind of region. And I don't know much else about peyote, but I can tell you that ayahuasca is from the jungle. So like Costa Rica, Peru, you'll find it there. Whereas peyote, I think, is more Mexico and like Southern U.S. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that.
But. No, I was just curious. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't the same thing. And it was, you know, one of those things like, you know, same horse of a different color kind of deal.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right. And so before we go any farther.
Oh, yeah.
You've got this like smoke coming, in the background. I guess you've got some incense going, because I keep seeing this when you're talking, and I keep seeing all this floating around. What have you got floating around back there?
I have, it's a diffuser. So I've got some aromatherapy happening. I've got essential oils in with some water, and then there is a ultrasonic plate that shakes it up really finely so that it aerates, and all of the molecules then are attached to the vapor, and then you inhale them, and it's wonderful.
What kind of ayahuasca are you putting in your little tray right now?
The right kind.
There we go.
I've got some like frankincense going in there, and
golden myrrh.
Yeah,
because the wise men showed up today, or the Amazon delivery guy.
Right. I've got the three wise men on Amazon. Nice. They come on my Amazon day. So
now, I've read before about frankincense. What's the deal with the smell from frankincense?
So frankincense was, to your point, one of the gifts to baby Jesus of the three wise men. Frankincense, myrrh, and aloes, which is also today known as sandalwood. So they were prized more than gold way back in the day. And there are many, many, many references in the Bible to frankincense. So it's been around for a while. Also, fun fact, Cleopatra was obsessed with frankincense, and she used to burn it, and she would take the resin and use that black resin to line her eyes, which is that famous like cat eye makeup that Cleopatra had was actually frankincense resin. Mm. Fun fact. But frankincense is very, very high in the chemical constituent sesquiterpenes. And sesquiterpenes are one of the only things that can cross the blood-brain barrier, which many, many pharmaceuticals cannot do. So what's neat about frankincense is that it can support the entire body, mind, and spirit. Now, I have to like pause and asterisk myself, because this whole conversation is about healing. And unfortunately, we are not allowed to declare that essential oils can heal. We're not allowed to claim that essential oils can cure. We are not allowed to have that in a conversation. So all that we can say is that essential oils promote healing, that they support, and that they manage symptoms in the body. So just have to give that little disclaimer. So
that's okay. On our podcast, we'll say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we probably should have done a lot of disclaimers about several of our prior podcasts, and we forget about that.
Well, I think one time we claimed that orange Skittles cured spinal injuries, so you're probably good with what you're saying.
Wait, they don't? I thought they did.
No, they do.
Yeah,
he's been on a heavy orange Skittle regimen ever since.
Yes.
Yeah. Got, I think that's the spine injury, but now I've got diabetes. So.
Right, but I also think that's offensive for colorblind people because they can't find the orange Skittles.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's colorblind.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think there seems to be such a big push with, I guess, even more gathering steam from big pharma against natural health? I thought as time went on and society became more progressive, that there'd be a little more openness to alternate methods of healing when the traditional methods have been proven not to work using the same drugs for the last few decades. But it seems now that the moment you mention even the benefit of, you know, base vitamins and minerals like vitamin D and zinc, etc., that you kind of get jumped on saying, oh, there's no proof that these, you know, vitamins, minerals have any benefit to the body, despite the fact there being thousands of research, you know, studies across decades proving exactly the opposite. But, you know, big pharma in the United States especially don't seem to be hiding the fact that if they can't make a profit out of it, and for a lot of naturally occurring, you know, stuff they can't, that they have no interest in doing research on it. They don't care how much it helps. They just don't want to have anything to do with it. And, you know, part of this whole crap about, you know, fentanyl and all these other drugs were, you know, they were perfectly safe, naturally occurring alternatives, but Big Pharma would never allow those to be used. I mean, even if you take, you know, various extracts of, you know, cannabis, et cetera, and hemp, that, you know, the FDA had no interest putting in, you know, research dollars into, you know, can this help with PTSD? Can it help with chronic pain? Can it help with arthritis? Can it help with mental issues? And, you know, they've outright refused to do any long-term and in-depth studies. And yet, as soon as a drug comes on the market, which makes them a ton of money, you know, they rush it through, can't wait to get it to the shelves. And then, you know, so often happens, you know, a few years later, 5 years, 10 years, you see an advert late night on TV and, did you take the drug, blah, blah, blah? Have you since died and are now speaking?
You might be entitled to compensation.
Yeah.
I know. It's such a heated topic. It really is. And it's kind of interesting that it would even be heated, because if there is a chance that something could help, why not explore it? And so, you know, I don't know. Does it come down to money? Maybe. I mean, oftentimes they say, like, if you want to know the true story, follow the money trail and you're going to find it. And, you know, and the thing about, you know, if bouncing off of the topic of essential oils is there is no copywriting or trademarking nature. And I'm like looking outside of the tree outside my window as I'm saying this. And it's morphing and shifting and changing. It shifts every single year with the seasons. There's more rain one year, there's less sun, there's this, there's that. So nature's always shifting and changing, and it's always going to be adapting with that. And so it can't be bottled and labeled and trademarked, because it's never the same from a chemical constituent perspective. Whereas, you know, you then take those chemical constituents and you can synthetically create them in a lab, and then it's a purified environment, it's sterile, you can recreate it, and it's always going to be the same chemical combination of carbons and hydrogens and whatever it is that makes up that constituent. And then you can, you know, press it into a pill, and it's always the same. And now that has a label, and now it has a price tag, and you can, you know, and then you charge for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's about money, but it's possible.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that a lot of pharmaceutical companies, as soon as they borrow studies from other countries where perhaps some naturally occurring, you know, plant or whatever has led to, you know, improved recovery rates, that they try and synthetically produce something similar so they can copyright it, patent it, and make money out of it rather than using the actual naturally occurring product. And that's something which has always kind of, you know, caused me to be skeptical about the pharmaceutical industry. I think at the ground level, the healthcare workers are very interested in making people better. But I think the higher up the chain you get, there is more the tendency that keeping people sick and masking symptoms without removing the actual cause is a much more profitable venture. And as long as we can keep people with some kind of semblance of happiness that they feel they're being cured or temporarily relieved of their symptoms, that's good enough. And I think it's certainly come to the head in a way this last 18 months with, again, a complete dismissal of any kind of thoughts of adopting a healthy lifestyle to combat, you know, something like COVID. I mean, yeah, lose weight, stop smoking, stop, you know, doing these things which are hurting your immune system and increase your chances. But people just want to take a pill or get a shot and that be them, just live life recklessly, but we'll just take this as the fix for it.
Right.
You know, a complete screw up, you know, emotionally, psychologically and physically, but as long as we take this shot or this pill, this will cure everything for me and I don't have to take any personal responsibility over my lifestyle choices when it comes to health.
Yeah. And again, it's such a heated conversation. And, you know, I think it's important also to call out that nothing is black or white. It doesn't need to be one way or the other. You know, I think that's where this conversation becomes so heated and paralyzing, is that it has to be one way or the other. No, you can stop smoking and pop a pill if you want to. You know, you can do both of those things if that feels truly in alignment with you. I just want to call that out there because it's been such a polarizing conversation and we don't need to polarize it. Mm-hmm. Everything is a gray area. Well, tell me what's black or white. Nothing. I don't know anything that's black or white.
Black and white movies. They're black and white.
No, they're actually chromatic. Well, you know,
okay. Newspapers, like way back in the day, those were black and white.
So we almost
had two things. So it's a perfect point to what you're saying. Yeah, there really is. And of course, you know, I'm just messing with you, May. But there is nothing black and white. There is no binary response in something as complicated as this. There's no ones and zeros. There's no yes, no. So as all of this stuff that's been going on in somebody like you that has all this knowledge, what are some of the things you've been hit with of people saying, hey, help me. Help me get healthier. Help me get over this problem. What are some of those things that you could tell people of, you know, hey, here's some simple things you could actually do?
Yeah. You know, and that is a great, great question. And I think as complicated as it can be, it also can be quite simple because as humans, we do a fabulous job at complicating things. We really do. Like everyone give a little pat on the back at how complicated we make things because sometimes, you know, as I was preparing for this conversation, I'm like, what could be like three easy takeaways from this conversation? And to go back to the seed that was planted not too long ago about like what comes first, your physical health or your mental health? Like which do you address first in order to feel your best self? And in my opinion, addressing the mental health is the first priority. And through addressing the mental health, you can actually address physical health, physical symptoms, physical discomfort. And so that's one piece of it. But one, if you're experiencing some kind of discomfort in one way, shape or form, mentally or physically, how much water have you had? What is your sleep like? And what is your diet? I know that perhaps that's like, pardon this expression, I'm beating a dead horse, but it's like, let's be super simple about it. What are you nourishing your body with? And let's start there. Because we all know if you have like 2 hours of sleep and you're expected to do anything the next day, you're a monster. Like no one wants to be around you. And oftentimes when people get headaches, for example, it's oftentimes you're dehydrated. you know? And then there's a lot to be said about diets, and I'm by no means a dietitian, but it's just something to look at and to consider. And then, you know, taking all that into consideration, I think then looking at your mental state and how is it that you talk to yourself? Like, start to really become aware and hear that voice. Are you looking at the woman going to yoga and having mismatched green colors and you're judging her for that? The frizzy haired woman? Or are you, is it silent?
No, we're
or do
looking,
you hear compliments?
We're looking at her completely different than you are.
Okay.
Well, let's be honest, May. We're looking at the woman going to yoga class in her yoga outfit a lot different than you probably are.
That may be so, but even still, there is a judgment there perhaps to listen to. Right. And that's the conclusion.
Now, when you found yourself thinking those thoughts, did you find a genesis for what that was, in that it was kind of breaking an unwritten fashion rule in your head, which kind of disturbed your comfort zone, that somebody else would so blatantly flaunt a mismatch of colors, which you yourself, it would be on your mind constantly? I mean, what was the genesis of having those thoughts? Because, I mean, you know, we know you well enough to know that you're a very open person, you're a very kind person, very accepting person, and that kind of surprised me when you said that. But what do you think the genesis of those? Because I know that those type of thoughts don't come from your heart. There's another source for why you were kind of thinking those things. It was pointing to something.
Yeah. And you're spot on that it's never just surface level, and that there's always something a little bit deeper to take a look at. And, you know, this is not easy or necessarily comfortable for me to say, but growing up, you know, I heard my mom judge a lot. And as children, from the ages of like 1 to 7, our brains are typically in a theta brainwave state, which is typically what you're aiming to access for hypnosis. So that means that in a theta brainwave state, the mind, the subconscious mind specifically, is in a more suggestible state. So for children, for example, when you say something like, "Oh, it's raining cats and dogs out there," a 5-year-old is going to run to the window and pray to see a cat or a dog, because they are A, taking it literally, and B, very suggestible, which is why we all tend to have some kind of childhood trauma in some way, shape, or form, because as best as our parents do, they're going to say something that is going to plant some kind of belief that then, you know, roots and flourishes to become something like judging other women. And so, you know, if I'm hearing judgment constantly as a child, that starts to become the talk track, that becomes the belief system. And then I grow up as an adult, and that's, you know, the leaves and the branches that are rooting out from that, and I have to start picking away. And so, you know, then it's like, okay, why is there judgment happening? Does that in some way deep in the psyche help me to feel that I'm safe? Does that help me to feel like I'm protecting a love interest or protecting my family by keeping other women away? I don't know exactly what the deep rooted thing is behind that judgment, but I can share that it was a talk track that was familiar to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think I find that, I mean, even when watching movies and watching, you know, fictional characters act out on the screen, you know, I find myself judging a lot of things based upon, I guess, in terms of the lines they're reading, the script they're following, even though I know it's an artificial character, you know, that, you know, I get over judgmental even about characters in movies, just because I absolutely hate a lack of common sense or a plot which basically relies on incompetence.
Well, you were extremely disappointed on the sequels from Star Wars. I think that's where that came from.
Well, they were just crap.
Yeah. And so that's when it started, when Disney took over.
That was a script, actors, and entire plot.
Yeah, and I think that happened to a lot of us when we realized that Disney just ruined Star Wars movies. Except for Rogue One.
But what I was trying to say there, mate, I don't think it's a very personal thing, because even for a character which doesn't exist as such, it's just being portrayed, we can still find ourselves thinking those thoughts, and it almost seems like a natural thing to put something or somebody in a box, which isn't your box, just to be able to view it and comment on it. And I don't know why it is, because I find myself doing it and I'm not in a bad mood when I'm doing it. It's not like I dislike that person. I just don't know what that is. I don't know where it comes from.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, I could have very easily, you know, so I said, okay, she's wearing two different color greens. Like, why would she leave the house that way? It takes just as much effort for me to say she's wearing two different color greens. And doesn't she look fabulous? Or doesn't she look, I don't know, courageous? You know, it takes just as much effort to have either one of those thoughts. But the default wiring of my brain was to go for the judgmental one. Now, real quick, I just want to call out that your example about watching movies and being judgmental is such a good example and super spot on. And what's interesting from a hypnosis perspective is that, I know you know this, that the mind knows no difference between what's imagined and what's real. So when we are watching a movie, for example, we are in a trance. We are, in fact, hypnotized. So for your brain at that time, that is real, even though you consciously know it's not real and you're in your seat at the movies or whatever it is, your home, you have your popcorn. So you know you're not there, whatever the scene is in the movie. And yet a part of the brain is like, this is real and this is happening and I'm also right there. So yeah, just kind of a neat like alignment there of you being
right. But it, going back historically, wasn't there that fear with movies, with TV, that it was almost a form of hypnosis, that people were going to stare at this screen and just be brainwashed, just, you know, stare at that screen and be hypnotized and believing all that stuff. I mean, I remember when 3D, it really hit the mainstream. You know, you could buy a 3D TV and 3D movies were coming out. And it was like, okay, now you're almost more immersed in this, right? And then that kind of died off. But still, like, to your point, you kind of forget that maybe I have a 23-inch TV or maybe I have an 80-inch TV. But you don't even think about the size of the TV. You are so enamored and so enthralled with what's right there in front of you. You don't realize how big the TV is. You're part of that. Right. You are just absorbed all the way in it. And is that not kind of a form of hypnosis?
Oh, you're full on. You're hypnotized by the TV, by the news, by your cell phones. I mean, have you ever watched someone crossing a street and on their phone, clearly on Instagram or whatever it is? You know, we are hypnotized. We are completely enthralled in that moment. And really, like, let's just bring up the definition of hypnosis real quick, just to disband that. Hypnosis is focused awareness. It means that you're both present in the moment and you're also completely focused in your TV or your phone, for example. So it just means that you're both there and you're not at the same time. So are we hypnotized by the TV, the movies, and by our phones? Absolutely. And so now that we know that, does that shift our choice in terms of what we're watching and how it influences our subconscious mind? It's something to consider.
I think possibly, well, I mean, at least for me, the most psychologically impactful thing in the movie The Exorcist was actually the flash frames. There's a few parts of the movie where they show a couple of flash frames, and they were the most uncomfortable parts of the movie because they were shown during pictures of relative tranquility compared to the rest of the movie, and then these horrible flash frames came in briefly. And this was at a time when you were widely allowed to do that. They'd even do that in advertising on TV. And then after a while, it got banned.
In the movies, too.
Yeah.
You know, they would pop up like a quick one flash frame of Coke or popcorn. And then you'd say, oh, I want popcorn.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden. And then you're like, I have to buy popcorn. You know, I must kill the queen. And, you know, it's kind of that same thing.
Well, I mean, it's not a conspiracy theory because, I mean, it's actually well documented, the whole MK Ultra program the CIA did about the effects of either sleep deprivation or drugs combined with brainwashing through normal media, but an oversaturation of media on a perhaps on a specific topic could change somebody's viewpoint towards things. Mm. I mean, you take Charles Manson, he was actually part, I think when he was in, I can't remember it. No, it wasn't when he was in college, but he was part of that MK Ultra program. He would go and he would take psychotropics, and basically they brainwashed him into forming a cult. And to the things have taught him, basically, look, this is how you get people to be subservient to you. And they basically created a cult leader. I mean, it's well documented. It's not conspiracy theory.
If
you
look
up, if you look up MK Ultra and Charles Manson, you'll see the history of the use of, like I said, psychotropics and either sleep deprivation and stuff in basically brainwashing people, using a Manchurian candidate to at some point in time and carrying out something which would achieve a goal, which, you know, I'm not well read enough to know what exactly. I think part of it was that they wanted the whole hippie movement, which was gaining ground at that time, to be looked at and maybe disparaged because it was being too widely embraced. And they wanted to return to a society of structure where people didn't have this free love and free will and free, I guess, expression. And so they tried to paint the picture, hey, cults are bad, free love is bad, drugs are bad. And so they created a monster.
Right. Which is exactly why May joined us today to talk about healing.
About healing,
Doesn't it all come full circle?
Right.
Yeah. Well, hey, you've hung out with us long enough. You know there's going to be rabbit holes we're going to go down.
No, it's good.
I'm just trying to swing it back around because I'm starting to get lost now, too. So now we're going to talk about MK Ultra. Yeah, I remember that. I'm like, you know, poor May sitting over there like, hey, what are we doing here, guys? Like, I thought we were going to talk about healing.
So back to a healing question. Do you think it's possible to just target physical ailments without concentrating on the psychological and spiritual ailments? Because people hit a roadblock a lot of the time if they have addictions or they have things they want to improve in their life, such as weight loss and things. But there's obviously some mental aspect to why people adopt a certain lifestyle or keep in a certain lifestyle, even when they know it's detrimental. So do you think it's possible to actually get rid of a lot of those physical issues without, you know, attacking the psychological part of it as well?
That is a great, great question. And, you know, I want to say yes, but it's like, you've got weeds in your lawn and you just take a clipper to it and you cut the weed at the base without pulling out the root. You know, the weed's going to come back more than likely. I shouldn't say more than likely, but it's possible for the weed to come back. So, you know, and they know that if, you know, if we're talking about physical symptoms, they know that pain is in the brain. The only reason why we have the sensation of pain is because the brain has wired, has fired off the neurons, the neurological system to that point, and then it sends a signal back to the brain that says discomfort, and it registers as pain. You know, if we think about soldiers who go to war and, you know, get a leg blown off and they're at the hospital, they get that phantom leg pains where they no longer have a leg. They literally don't have a leg, but they feel the pain. And so how can that be? If you don't physically have that leg anymore, how are you registering pain in your brain for that leg that is gone?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we underestimate how strong and powerful and how much we don't understand and know about the brain. I think there's so much benefit to addressing the mental component as a priority and then allowing that to support the physical component, if that makes sense.
Well, I think the mind over matter approach kind of has to give room for some type of chemotropic reaction for your body to recognize and acknowledge pain and discomfort. Otherwise, a lot of people would just simply be like, oh, well, that's nothing, and write it off and self-medicate to deal with those issues. And, you know, you mentioned the phantom limb syndrome in terms of people registering pain in the neural networks. There's some theories that that is your brain reminding you that you're not at full capacity, that you do have a deficit in your physical system and structure. So don't try and, you know, do something which you can't do. And obviously that goes back hundreds of thousands of years in terms of evolution, because obviously we can compensate to some degree. If you lose a leg or an arm nowadays, you're not going to have perhaps full functionality, but you can live pretty much a normal life. Whereas it used to pretty much be a death sentence. You know, it'd be, it'd be like a horse with a broken leg, you know, they take it out the back and shoot you. But yeah, I think, you know, the body tries to, at least the brain tries to fool you more than is beneficial at times. And how deliberate that is on our own part in terms of trying to think, okay, we've got this, so we don't go into panic mode. I don't know. I don't know if, you know, you have a kind of clear mind that you can actually be, I don't know, really honestly truthful about your body's condition. I mean, I've got to the age now where I pretty much ache every morning when I wake up from too many years of athletics and all that kind of
crap. You're an old man.
Yeah, basically. And, you know, I ignore it. You know, I kind of walk it off. I'll try and forget about it by having coffee, whatever. But, you know, at some point I will have to address it if it gets worse or continuous. But probably for the last 10, 15 years since I stopped playing sports competitively, yeah, I just freaking ache most of the time. Most of the days I get up, I freaking ache. If I sit down in a position for too long, I freaking ache, you know. And I think that mind over matter thing, and especially for men, that kind of macho thing of, oh, I'll just walk it off, it's not an issue, you know, suck it up, you know, is probably more of a problem. I mean, men do tend to die at far greater numbers than women for stuff where early diagnosis and treatment is a big factor in recovery. I mean, men tend to leave it too long and end up dying. I mean, I love that. There was a billboard of this year, 6.47 million men will die of stubbornness. And it was about going to the doctors, and underneath somebody had put in, no, we won't.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God, that's perfect. As someone who is a very stubborn person, that rings true for me. But yeah, you know what, you bring up a really good point that I think deserves calling out as well, is that pain isn't necessarily always a bad thing. It is a way that the body is communicating to either say, stop doing what you're doing, or don't continue, or you don't have enough strength to do XYZ thing. You know, if your ankle's broken, don't go run a marathon. Like, the body's saying you need to stop. And so there is a defense mechanism that is natural to us that's allowing us to survive. And I also want to call out that, you know, those who have chronic pain, which chronic pain is defined as 3+ consistent months of pain, it now is described as chronic versus acute. Chronic pain also has such an impact on the mental capacity. It's hard when you are in pain, moving your body, even to get up out of bed or to move around at all. It's really hard to do anything because you're uncomfortable. And I know that I'm speaking from a place that I don't experience that. And so it may sound like, oh, it's so easy. Yeah, okay. Start with the mental capacity in order to support my physical pain or physical discomfort. Yeah, it sounds easy. But the actual practice of it, yeah, that may be challenging. So I just want to call that out for those, because I know it is so common, unfortunately, to have chronic pain that that I hear you. I hear that. It's a difficult path. It's not easy.
Yeah. And it's kind of like fevers, right? You know, once you get a fever, everybody wants to give somebody like Tylenol to get rid of the fever. But the fever is telling your body, hey, you got an infection, so we're going to raise your temperature up so we can fight this infection. Mm-hmm. So we treat the fever and we don't treat the infection.
Yeah, that's right. We are so intelligent. We don't give ourselves enough credit. We really are. Our bodies are amazing and fabulous. If we really think about what it is that our body does and is capable of, it's actually mind-blowing. Because you're right. Like, all these feelings that we feel, these sensations, these symptoms, these are forms of communication. You know, our arm doesn't have a mouth to say, I'm sore today, give it a rest. It then has the sensations of being sore because, you know, the lactic acid is released and blah, 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 blah. I'm talking into things that I'm not like a super expert in, but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is how our body communicates to us to send us messages. And it then is our choice to listen or not.
Yeah. I actually read that this kind of superhuman strength thing, which comes up every now and then in the news about somebody who lifted a car off of somebody that...
The mom, the kid's under the car and the mom lifts it up with adrenaline and all that stuff.
Well, apparently pretty much all humans have enough adrenal glands that everybody has the capacity to have this super strength, but it's actually a delimiter your brain puts on, because literally people would be lifting weights which would tear their muscles away from, you know, their bones, because they would go too far. And so your brain puts this stopper on, at least for most people, how much they can do, how much they can exert themselves, and then kind of cause it quits. But, you know, there are certainly some people who, through training, you know, whether it be weightlifters, etc., can lift abnormal, you know, amounts of weight, and it still being exactly the same physiological makeup as we have. It was just a mental decision to follow a path whereby they could, you know, utilize and maximize the amount of strength available to them. But that still pales into insignificance when the brain actually takes over and releases this adrenaline and suddenly decides, you know, some 50-year-old woman can, you know, lift up a 1.3-ton vehicle or whatever it is, you know, with little... issue and hold it up and actually, you know, for somebody to escape. So, I mean, the body is an incredible thing, but the mind is more incredible because, you know, the body is on a leash. The mind keeps the body on a leash. And, you know, some people self-muzzle themselves and restrict themselves because they restrict the mind, I think. I think to truly expand, you know, a lot of things you're capable of, you really have to liberate the mind and let the mind, trust in the mind, that the brain has had hundreds of thousands of years, if not millions of years of evolution to be able to perfect this stuff. And perhaps we should probably trust this chemical memory and, you know, body, mind and spirit have been working in synergy for a long time. And we don't know so much about ourselves that we get to set all of the rules for how we approach everything in life. Sometimes we have to kind of let go and let the brain do what it's there for.
Yeah. And you bring up a really hard point, is that many people prefer to try to control things, which is like the hardest thing, because nothing is in control. So yeah,
totally makes sense. So, May, can you remind everybody how to get a hold of you, your Instagram, your, you know, Facebook, you know, your podcast information, all that good stuff? That, you know, just give everybody a quick reminder of how do we get a hold of May?
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Yes. My name is May Devi and my website is maydevi.com. And that's a D two E's, V like Victor Y. And my Instagram handle is maydevi.cht, as that stands for certified hypnotherapist. And what else? My website, my name, my Instagram. And yeah, and if anyone is curious of working with me, I absolutely would invite you to. You can check out a little bit of what it is that I do via my podcast, which is Stories from the Subconscious. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And the first episode of every month is a hypnosis episode. So I invite you all to tune in, because you just might surprise yourself with how powerful you are.
Great. And we'll, as usual, we'll have all your links and everything on our website and across our social media so people can find you.
Absolutely. There, so. And by the way, May, once again, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to join us. We certainly appreciate that. Please, everybody, you know, check her podcast out. It's a cool podcast. I enjoy listening to it. I learn something new every time you put out a new episode. I mean, that's great. And with all that said, thank you for tuning into this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd, and we will catch you on the next one.
thanks for listening to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.